The following programming is sponsored by Looking Forward. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
You're listening to WWDB AM Talk 860. This is the Looking Forward Show. Life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived looking forward. At the intersection of justice and community lies the Looking Forward Show. And now, here's your host, Jeffrey Abramowitz.
Welcome to the Looking Forward Show here at WWDB in Philadelphia. I am so grateful to be here today. My name is Jeff Abramowitz, and I'm here with a wonderful guest. I'm not going to tell you who it is yet, because I do want to just tease you a little bit and tell you that it's been several years that I've known our guest, and he helped me after I came home from incarceration and was navigating my way back, and has been instrumental in playing a role in that. We'll talk a little bit about that today. But I do want to start off by saying that it is April 2nd, and April 2nd, the month of April in the country, is also Second Chance Month and Reentry Month. So I want to give a shout out for all those people that are going through our justice system, that have come home, that have been trying to navigate that next journey in their life, and give a shout out. If you know somebody that may be touched by the justice system, give them a handshake. Give them a smile, a welcome home, say, hey, how you doing? I'll just recognize that they're there. And if there's some way you can help them out, whatever it might be, that would be awesome and even better than I would expect. But just a good hello is good enough. I'm really excited about what's been going on recently. I've been traveling a bunch, speaking all over the country in the past few weeks. We were in Nashville, Tennessee, at the Coalition on Adult Basic Education Conference, and had a wonderful conference there and met all different kinds of people. But one of the things that makes this particular episode so timely was, over and over again, the issue of apprenticeships came up. And, you know, the model of an apprenticeship just makes so much good common sense. And why we don't just embed this as in all of our systems, in our workforce systems and education systems, is well beyond me. But we're going to get there. We're going to get there with our guest today. John Colbert is our guest from Apprenticeships for America, the executive director. John, how are you?
Hey, I'm great. Great, Jeff. Great to see you.
It is so good to see you. And first, I want to start by giving you just a huge congratulations. I know that you recently became the executive director at Apprenticeships for America. We're going to talk about apprenticeships, because some of my audience may not even know what apprenticeships are. We're going to kind of walk through some of that today. But just a huge congratulations to you. And I'm really excited for you, to be honest. I know we've known each other for a bit. But can you start us off and kick us off today by just telling our audience a little bit about John Colbert? Like, how did you get started in all this stuff?
Yeah, so first step, great to be on the show, and great to be with you in this Second Chance Month. That's excellent. I have to say, for my entire professional career, I've been focused on the question of how do people advance economically in the society, and how can we create a society that has more equity? And I've done that from a variety of perspectives. I've looked at that question from the neighborhood perspective, the neighborhoods that people live in, and what can be done to improve the quality of life in neighborhoods to give people better life opportunities. I've looked at it from the perspective of housing, and how can we build and create more affordable housing that gives people the base from which they can build a life that's full of opportunity. But most of my career, I've really focused on this question from the perspective of education and employment. Because at the end of the day, you can live in a nice neighborhood, we can make neighborhoods nicer, but if you don't have income, it's really hard to move forward. You know, we can put you in a nice home, that's a great thing, but if you don't have income, it's really hard to move forward. And so I just have really fixated on this question of what does it take to enable people to access the kind of education, training, and economic opportunity they need to build a good life for themselves and their families.
So I love
I've done that in many different ways. Yeah.
Yo, so I know you have, Don, and I know you're not going to bring this stuff up because you're kind of a modest person. But the truth is that you've been through so many levels of this process. I know that you were VP of Operations at the Ford Foundation, pretty remarkable. Yep. And then you worked for Skills for America, the Future Program at Aspen Institute, which is also kind of truly incredible. And then I got to meet you at Jevs Human Services here in Philadelphia, and that's where I first. So I'm going deep on this for a little bit because I'm curious about John, because I've known you for a bit and I've never really asked you this question, but what was it that kind of got you thinking about this? Like, what was it in your, was there an experience in your life that just set you off and said, I got to figure this out?
Yeah, well, so this kind of goes back a ways, but growing up, my parents were big sort of political civic people. In the community I grew up in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And my mom was a kind of politician, and she worked for politicians and ran political campaigns. And my dad was, you know, sort of a civic do-gooder and involved in nonprofit organizations. And I kind of assumed growing up that I was going to sort of follow in their footsteps, and I was going to go into politics, and I was going to run for Congress or be a mayor or something like that. And in high school, you know, one of those amazing opportunities sometimes you get, I got a chance to go to Washington, D.C. and work at Congress as an intern in my senior year. And I learned that I was not going to go into politics. I learned that was not the place I wanted to go. And there were two reasons. One is inside the buildings that I was working in, there was just this incredible dysfunction. People talking past each other. No one people seemed more interested in the fight than in the solution. And that was really disappointing. Even people I really respected, I didn't see the focus on solutions that I wanted. And then the other thing that was going on, and this was sort of early 80s, it was, you know, cities, you know, having some tough times, and a lot of people being deinstitutionalized, a real rise in homelessness, something that in Minneapolis I hadn't seen. That it's probably just my experience in Minneapolis. But anyway, and so, I mean, literally on the way to work every day, I was, you know, stepping over or talking to people who were camped out on the steps, literally, of our Capitol building. And it just felt to me like here we have this dysfunction going in, you know, inside the doors of this building, and this incredible problem outside the doors. And why is it we're not trying to figure out how to solve that? And so what I learned after this experience is that there was this amazing social sector, that there were these nonprofit organizations and foundations and church groups and civic organizations, all of which were sort of focused on the solution side of the problem, not on the fight. And that's really where I got my background and drive to get involved in this issue and to do it through these nonprofit organizations.
I love it. So you stayed hyper-focused almost all of your career on the issue of workforce and education. And I was just speaking to some people in Washington recently, and we were talking about the reality that, you know, our Department of Labor and Departments of Justice really only recently began to understand how they need to talk to each other. Like, they need to understand how as you get smarter academically and you learn math and reading and digital literacy skills and financial literacy skills, that all has a place as you navigate into the workforce and the Department of Labor and get people into jobs and career opportunities, which is really remarkable. So I think there is, and I think that's what's so great about the apprenticeship model is kind of all that. Before we talk apprenticeships, so I want to just give you a big shout out and thank you. When I came home, one of the challenges that I had was really understanding what my career path was going to be. And after leaving Beyond Literacy, which is now was Community Learning Center, now Beyond Literacy, I came to Jevs Human Services, and you guys gave me an opportunity, and you sat me down, and I remember our first meeting was coffee down in the lobby, and I had just gotten done talking to the president then, it was Jay Spector, and I just finished getting coffee with him, and you came down and you and I got to talk, and you said, like, what are you passionate about? You know, what do you, what makes you move? What drives you? And where do you hope to be? And we really had this good discussion about opening doors up at Jevs Human Services. And we did. It was remarkable to see Jevs and the transformation of how they started embracing people that were justice impacted, many of whom actually had worked for Jevs for years and never embraced it because they were afraid of possible repercussions in the employment arena. And Jevs put their money where their mouth was, and they brought me on as executive director. And actually, that was the beginning of what's been, for me, just an incredible ride. So I owe a debt of gratitude to you and to Jay and to Jeff Booth, who really opened the door for me. So thank you so much for that.
Jeff, bringing you on was like the easiest decision in the world. The passion that you brought, the talent that you have in this area, and your capacity to bring an empathy and lived experience around this work just made it such an easy decision. And I think, and you know, I'm actually really proud of Jeff's Human Services, because we were walking the talk. You know, we were really saying that if you want to create economic opportunity broadly in society, including for people who are returning home, then you've got to be, you know, ready to take risks on in your hiring practices. You know, go out and find the people who are equipped to do the work wherever they come from. And so it was such an easy decision.
Well, not every employer in the country feels that way. We're hoping we're going to get there, so we're working at it. But I wanted to start off and give our audience some background on what is an apprenticeship. I think everyone has different notions of what it means to be an apprentice or what an apprenticeship actually is. Can you kind of get us started with, you know, what is an apprenticeship?
Yeah. So most people, if you say the word apprentice, they will probably think about like a carpenter or a plumber or somebody who's in the building trades and somehow got some training so that they could, you know, be professionals in the building trades. And in fact, that is about 50% of the registered apprenticeships in the United States. So let me back up just a little bit and talk about what apprenticeship is. Apprenticeship, first off, is a job. So, you know, when you think of that plumber or that carpenter and they're getting trained, they're not going, you know, to school and having zero paycheck while they do that. They're actually doing work as a carpenter, as a plumber in training. In the process of doing that work, that is structured with some classroom instruction and then some on the job training from a mentor or a coach, they are acquiring the skills to be professionals in their careers. It turns out that apprenticeship is something you can use widely across occupations in the economy. So we have members who are apprenticeship sponsors who are putting people to work in apprenticeships in information technology or in sales or in healthcare settings or in public school teachers. There are many, many different ways for people to take advantage of this mix of on-the-job training, classroom instruction, and a paycheck that can then put that together in a way that gives people the skills and abilities to enter a profession. And I'll just say one other thing about apprenticeship is it kind of comes in a couple different varieties in the United States. So there's registered apprenticeship. Those are apprenticeships that are set up through the United States Department of Labor or sometimes through state government agencies. And then there's a lot of companies who will do apprenticeship that is unregistered. And that just means that they're doing it informally without necessarily the seal of approval of these government agencies. But they can be very good opportunities as well.
So is there an incentive for an employer to have an apprenticeship program?
Yes. Yeah, so there are a couple different ways that employers are winners in this. Number one is for a lot of employers, just finding good workers is really, really hard. Many employers get tired of just sort of stealing from the employer next door and bringing somebody over and then somebody's going to steal from them. And so for many employers, apprenticeship is really a way to build up the workforce and ensure that there are enough workers to get the job done. The second thing is that in most apprenticeship programs, apprentices start at a lower wage and work their way up to the sort of market wage for their occupation. So for many employers, the apprentice's wages are a little bit concessionary as they are building the skills and abilities to be, you know, fully competent in their profession. And then I'll say one other thing, and we've heard this over and over again from employers who participate in apprenticeship programs, is that the investment in apprenticeships not only is good for the apprentice, it's actually really good for the whole workforce. When people can see that that folks can come into the company, are getting investment and support to grow up, the mentors who are involved in the process, the supervisors who are involved in the apprenticeship process, all get some value from this experience. And I hear that over and over again. Employers never expect they're going to see this, and then they come away with a real respect.
I love it. So one of the questions I have that I think is, especially some folks in my audience that are listening, some people have gone through the justice system, some are living in marginalized communities across the country. And I'm curious, do you need a high school diploma or a high school equivalency in order to get into an apprenticeship?
Some apprenticeships do, to be honest, but most don't. And in fact, the whole premise of apprenticeship is that it's about the skills that you learn, and it's about the capabilities that you have. So when there's a regulatory requirement or something that that a profession requires in order for you to advance, there may be some educational requirements. But by and large, this falls into this area of hiring, which we call skills-based hiring, not credential-based hiring.
So we're going to talk about skills-based hiring in a minute, but one of the things that I've been working on, you may or may not realize this, is, but I do some work for the U.S. Department of Education as a subject matter expert, and I've been working on a project the last few years that have been integrating what we call an IET, an Integrated Education Training. And an IET, for the audience, is where a math teacher is teaching fractions in or near a classroom where a carpentry teacher is teaching carpentry. So they're learning both math and carpentry at the same time, and then putting on top of that some workforce preparedness, like time management skills, and I call them essential skills. Some people call them soft skills. I call them essential skills, really understanding how to deal with conflict in the workplace and all those things that are going to help you be successful. The thing with an IET, honestly, though, is it's not a paid program. And that's why I love apprenticeships. It's like, gosh, we're helping people feed their families and put diapers on their kids and all those good things they need to survive at the same time, which just makes so much good sense. And they're in all different fields. I was recently talking with a group. We were on our show, actually, on my Behind Every Employer podcast. And we talked with Kawasaki, and Kawasaki has an advanced manufacturing program that they have, and they were on doing some great work with apprenticeships and starting to dive in. So the apprenticeship model just makes really good sense. Recently, I believe it was March 6th, the President of the United States signed an executive order, and that put another $440 million into the apprenticeship pool, targeting additional funding for these kinds of programs. So we have all this greatness. Like, this is just makes so good sense. I'm sitting feeling good right now. And I'm wondering, you know, why isn't this everywhere? Like, why isn't this the hottest thing out in the workforce now? Like, why doesn't every employer engage? So what are the barriers of our apprenticeship? And I know there's some, and I think the registration piece might be one of them, but can you talk us through a little bit about what are the negatives in the apprenticeship world?
Yeah. So first off, you know, for most employers, developing and growing talent isn't their number one expertise, right? They're there to make Kawasaki motorcycles or whatever it is that they do. And so what we have found over and over again when we talk to employers about this is that they're looking for solutions providers, people who can come in and help them set up their apprenticeship program. And to be candid, you know, in the United States, we don't have enough of those solutions providers, and we don't have enough employers who are stepping up to offer apprenticeships in countries that look like us. If you went to England or went to France or Canada or Australia, you would find you know, something on the order of about 8 times the number of apprenticeships there than you would find here. So we have a long way to go. And really, we think there's two things that are getting in the way of getting apprenticeships to that level of scale. The first is that, you know, in spite of the government's expansion of support for apprenticeships, for which we're very grateful, we're still spending as a country much, much less on apprenticeship than countries that we might compare ourselves to. Sometimes it's a tenth as much. It can be as the 20th as much. We have a long, long way to go to expand the support for apprenticeships. The second thing is that we need more of these solutions providers who can work with employers. And we've seen over and over again in countries that have grown their apprenticeship practice, these solutions providers are really critical to helping employers through the apprenticeship process.
Awesome. Great answer. We're here with John Colburn, and John is talking. We're talking apprenticeships today here at the Looking Forward Show. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back. You're listening to the Looking Forward Show at WWDB in Philadelphia, and it's being sponsored by the PD Green Program. We'll be right back.
This is WWDB AM Talk 860, the Looking Forward Show. This program is being sponsored in part by the PD Green Program. The PD Green Program supports the academic goals of incarcerated and formerly incarcerated people through high-quality volunteer tutoring programs. The PD Green Program has touched more than 16,000 students, 7,285 volunteer placements, and are located in over 120 sites across the country. To learn more about the PD Green Program, you can go to PDPETEYGREENEprogram.org. And now, back to our host, Jeff Abramowitz.
We are back at the Looking Forward Show. I'm here with John Colburn. We're having a fun discussion about apprenticeships. We're learning a lot today. And John, we were just talking about, before we took a break, we're talking about why everyone's not doing this. And I guess I want to turn the tide a little bit from the employee end. And why isn't everyone asking for this? So yeah. when it comes to generational poverty, we know that many of our people in our country today, they need education skills. They need education. They also need skill development. And we're talking about, getting those skills that kind of get them into the workforce and really be successful. And I struggle with the issue about our skills-based hiring issue, because I do believe that education needs to play an important role in all of that. Like, you talked about a job, and you talked about apprenticeships leading to jobs, and I think of it differently. I think apprenticeships lead to careers, and I kind of take the word job out of my vocabulary anymore, because I think a career is something that minimum wage is one thing, but that pathway to be a supervisor, a manager, and hopefully an owner or vice president, that's something that takes education and development and that skill-based learning that comes with all this goodness that happens. From the student end or the employee end, one of the challenges I have with apprenticeships is that right now, today, I think about 60% of all apprenticeships are primarily white, Caucasian men and women. We have about 12% of our minority populations are in apprenticeships, and about 20% are unidentified. They kind of don't declare or whatever. But I'm curious, from your perspective, this seems to me like a great way of getting out of generational poverty. And I'm wondering, what do we need to do to kind of get more of our marginalized populations kind of into this circle?
Yeah, so appreciate the question. And Jeff, as always, you bring an analysis to this that I learned from. So I appreciate your raising that. So let's talk about some of the challenges of apprenticeship and how that plays out for folks who are struggling to make their way up. And so first off, I think one thing that we see in apprenticeship is that it kind of reflects the occupations that are in apprenticeship. So we have a lot of construction trades that just needs a lot of guys, right? And historically, that there's moves to change this, but historically, that's also been white guys, right, in those jobs, and that has really dominated some of the demographics of apprenticeship. Interestingly, when you start moving into other professions that are less dominated by one gender or another, or one race or another, things get a little bit better. But we still have a challenge here, and I think there's. So let me speak to a couple of those challenges. So number one is, even though I said, you don't need necessarily a high school degree or, you know, some credential to get into an apprenticeship program, you often do need some level of aptitude and some level of skills to be able to succeed in the program. And so it for many communities, there's something called a pre-apprenticeship program. The idea there is to give people a sort of on-ramp into apprenticeship. And the best of these programs not only provide you the skills and, you know, help you with your sort of basic aptitude questions, they also help you navigate that connection to the apprenticeship program. They know the people who run the apprenticeship program. They can get you introduced to them. They can tell you what to expect. They can sort of they can prepare you for what you're going to experience. They're going to make sure you have, you know, the tools and equipment you need in order to be successful in the apprenticeship program. So all of that is really a critical piece to expanding access to apprenticeship. The other thing that we need to do, candidly, is we need to tackle this occupational segregation problem, where you know white guys end up in construction and women of color end up in healthcare services roles. We need to take that on, and we need to make sure that people feel like they have opportunity across occupations. That's a whole larger conversation, but certainly something that things like pre-apprenticeship programs can be a part of.
Yeah, so many good points. So I don't know where to start. So first of all, I love the pre-apprenticeship model because, quite frankly, you know, I work in the justice space and inside of prisons and jails across the country, and the pre-apprenticeship piece can be done anywhere. Like, that can be done inside our prisons and jails. Like, so when men and women are walking out, they're walking out into a full apprenticeship where they don't have to worry about feeding their families. They're going to have that apprenticeship, have some income to get them off the ground. It just makes really good sense. We are woefully behind on that inside our prisons and jails across the country. We have not thought about it. And I was just listening to a wonderful podcast this morning about the number of students that are leaving high school today. And the number is astounding, and a large part because of COVID, and the whole culture has changed. And we're seeing a lot of out-of-school youth that are dropping out of high school. And what a great way for them to kind of jump back in and go into an apprenticeship where they can find that true career moving forward. I love the pre-apprenticeship model. From the pre-apprenticeship and just engaging the employers at that level. But part of it is, especially with many of our populations that struggle, is they don't know what they don't know. And I'm curious if you have any solutions to this. I know at Jevs they did, because they operated the Career Link in Philadelphia. Yes. And, you know, I think that every person that is unemployed should have their own personal career navigator. Like, they should have somebody they can call and say, hey, John, guess what? I want to do this job and I'm just not sure. Like, what is it? That's why I have this great idea. So we're doing a job fair in Philadelphia coming up at Temple University. And I offered a great suggestion. I said that everyone that comes in to the job fair has assigned to them a person that's a career navigator. So that when they go to a table, they can say to the person, like, what does that job mean? Like, what does that involve? What does that do? What do you do there? So that they don't waste everybody's time kind of, you know, putting in a resume or getting an interview. They can really target for what they would love to do. We know in America that people that do what they love to do stick with it and they do it. People that do it because they have to do it, not so much. Like, there's a greater likelihood they're not going to stay in that job. So I love the pre-apprenticeship piece. Does a pre-apprenticeship have to be registered in the United States?
No, in most places, they are not registered. And there is no federal registration process for pre-apprenticeship programs. So the good news there is that it's very flexible and it can be used in lots of different ways. A little bit the bad news is you got to be careful that you're actually signing up for a pre-apprenticeship program that, you know, knows what they're doing, that's actually going to get good results for people. There's a little bit of concern out there that a lot of people have taken, you know, the old, what we used to call train and pray, you know, sort of we give you training and then hope you get a job. They've taken that approach and just kind of slapped a pre-apprenticeship label on it. So my encouragement for anyone who's looking into pre-apprenticeship programs is to ask, you know, what happens to graduates after they complete this this program? How many of them actually go on to apprenticeship? What are the experiences there? Ask to talk to a graduate so you can get a perspective of just what the experience there looks like. And then, Jeff, I want to say one other thing about sort of the challenge of connecting folks to apprenticeship programs, because I have to say, you know, for 60 years plus, we have had this message that's gone out to young people and people who are seeking opportunity that there's kind of one pathway to do that, and that's through college. And you and I know going to college is a good thing, and anyone who wants to go to college should go to college, absolutely. But it's also not the only way to think about how you advance your future. And I think that the beautiful thing about apprenticeship is, especially for somebody who's a little bit more hands-on, who wants to learn by doing, it's a different way of learning and sometimes connects to people in a way that college doesn't. And I think part of our country's coming to terms with new ways of learning and new ways of creating opportunity and careers for people is to understand that there are going to be multiple pathways to those futures, some of which run through college, but some of which are going to run through apprenticeship and other kinds of pathways.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right on that. I know you've traveled the world, and I've traveled the world with my family, and we've gone to other countries where, quite frankly, the plumber is the doctor. They have that status as they are just as important as everybody else, and there's no differentiation. And people recognize that everyone has a place in their society. No matter what your occupation is, you bring value to society and your community at a certain level. And here, we've not gotten there yet. The trades haven't gotten to the level yet where, you know, we recognize, except when your toilet breaks, the importance of a plumber. And, yeah. You know, and I think that's...
Who, by the way, is probably making more than, you know, the master's in social work person, right? And so I think this is our challenge, is to, number one, recognize the dignity of work, no matter, you know, where it comes from. To recognize the value of skills, no matter who has conveyed the credential for those skills, and to recognize that there's many pathways to get to a rewarding future.
It really is so true. And, you know, we see it in all different kinds of venues. I know I did a project with waste management not long ago, and waste management is sanitation. And, you know, quite frankly, you know, just think about what happens if your garbage isn't picked up for a week, let alone a month or 2 months, and what can really happen, the consequences of that. So I think everyone has a special place in our communities for all that. I want to kind of draw to another point, which is really, I believe that if you're not at the table, you're often being served as the meal. And in this discussion, I don't think that we have the employers at the same table as our students, that we're all not together on this as a team. And I think that part of the fracturing is employers kind of a fear of the unknown. You know, I've been doing a lot of talking over the last few years about hiring people that are justice impacted, hitting that untapped talent pool. And now it's only because really there's so many job openings in the country that employers are opening their door up and saying, you know, Jeff, we want to talk about this. We want to learn, like, what do we need to do to be successful? And I think it should be the same way with apprenticeships. You know, there right now are more jobs in our country than people to fill them. And yet employers should be embracing this great tool that's out there called apprenticeships and still are not there. Can you talk to us a little bit? You recently, and congratulations again, you recently became executive director for Apprenticeships for America. Can you talk a little bit about what your job is there and what Apprenticeships for America does?
Yeah, so we are the National Trade Association, if you will, for apprenticeship. So if you're an organization that's working with employers and working with communities to advance apprenticeship, we want to be your trade association. And what that means is, number one, is we do a little work with the government. Right. So we try to make sure the government is doing all that it can to support apprenticeship. And whether that's on the funding side or setting up programs or making sure that the regulations and red tape that they put in front of apprenticeship aren't too crazy. Those are things that we're going to spend, you know, time and energy on for sure. The second thing that we try to do is make sure that the organizations that are doing this really important work of providing solutions for employers who want to do apprenticeship, that they are equipped to do that as well as possible. They have access to the technology, the tools, the knowledge and know-how. And so, you know, whether that's through conferences or research reports or what have you, we try to make sure this community of practitioners is as effective as they can. And then the third thing that we do, and we need to do a whole lot more of it, as this conversation is showing, is just talking about apprenticeship and making sure that apprenticeship is out there as every bit as much an important pathway to advance careers and economic opportunity as college would be. And so that's, you know, that's our mission. That's what we do. We do it every single day.
I love it. So there, if we wanted to get information about apprenticeships for America, how would we go about doing that?
So we have a very long website name called apprenticeshipsforamerica.org. And feel free to take a look at the resources that we have on that website. We have information that just sort of describes apprenticeship, describes how to get involved in apprenticeships. And there's plenty of opportunities to sign up for information there. The other resource that I encourage folks to take a look at is actually apprenticeships.gov. And it's the government's website for apprenticeship. It'll give you access to information on where there might be apprenticeships in your community that you want to connect to, which employers are using apprenticeship, as well as information, just general information about apprenticeships. And between those two resources, you're likely to find the information you're looking for.
It is actually a wonderful website on both yours and the apprenticeship.gov website, because that website, you really, I mean, it really shows you by region, by state, by city, where you can go to find apprenticeships in your community, and has all the data that you'd want to support the why. The one of the most remarkable statistics that I happened upon recently when I was at a conference was I was reading someone's article or their document on apprenticeships, and it said that over 90% of those people that complete an apprenticeship are actually hired with that employer as a full-time employee. That's remarkable.
This is crazy. You know, we talk about apprenticeship as being the gold standard of workforce development because it has some of the best wage and career trajectory outcomes for people. It has some of the best job placement outcomes for people. As a former Secretary of Labor used to say, it's college without the debt. There is a lot going for apprenticeship, for sure. That being said, you know, it's not a cure-all. It doesn't work in every situation. Not every employer is going to be ready to do this. And, you know, some folks are going to be looking for other ways to advance their careers. But we're big fans. We really think that the apprenticeship model is one of the best models out there.
I love it. So you're listening to the Looking Forward Show on WWDB Radio. We're going to be right back with John Colbert in a second. But John, before we take a break, I'm going to give you some advance warning on this. So one of my favorite things to do is I have in my hand my magic wand, and I'm going to be handing it over to you because I'm going to give you the magic wand so that you can make your magic wand work when it comes to apprenticeships. So we're going to be right back on the Looking Forward Show with WWDB. Jeff Abramowitz.
This is WWDB AM Talk 860, The Looking Forward Show. This program is being sponsored in part by the PD Green Program. The PD Green Program supports the academic goals of incarcerated and formerly incarcerated people through high-quality volunteer tutoring programs. The PD Green Program has touched more than 16,000 students, 7,285 volunteer placements, and are located in over 120 sites across the country. To learn more about the PD Green Program, you can go to PDPETEYGREENEprogram.org. And now, back to our host, Jeff Abramowitz.
We are back at the Looking Forward Show on WWDB Radio. It's sponsored by the PD Green Program. I'm here with our guest, John Colbert, Executive Director of the Apprenticeships for America. And John, I told you, and I wasn't lying, I actually have my magic wand, and I pull this out for my shows. I actually pull it out when my staff annoy me so I can put that curse on them. I can't believe I said that out loud. But I'm going to hand this over to you, John, because, you know, one of the things that we, as people that work in the field of workforce development, are often, we are solution driven. And you said this yourself, like kind of finding solutions to problems, figuring out what's going to work. So I'm handing you my magic wand, and I want you to wave it, and I want you to kind of give it, what's the solution for dealing with apprenticeships and really making them a part of our culture?
Yep. So let me tell you, I'm going to answer your question, but I'm also going to tell you a little story first, which is, if you were a young person in England, and you were thinking about what's next for yourself, you might, like a lot of people do, fill out the common app, right? It's the standard application that you can use for any college or university, and then you'd go to the website where that app sits, and you'd fill it out, and then it would give you some choices about what you could do with that app, and you could take it to college. You could take it to university, but you could also take it to apprenticeship. And in the UK, you'd have a side-by-side list. You'd get to choose. That choice is the choice that we think we should be putting in front of job seekers and young people who are looking to enter the labor force. That it doesn't have to all be college, that there are these alternatives that allow you to earn and learn as you go. And then let me just say one other thing that I think is really critical, and you've alluded to this in our conversation, which is that the apprenticeship isn't the end, not for anyone, that it is an opportunity for you to build your career, and your career might take you to further education. It might take you to another apprenticeship or another level of apprenticeship, and that allows you to advance. So no one is stuck in a job. No one is stuck at a particular education level that they don't want to be stuck in, and that there is maximal opportunity to be able to advance in careers. I'm going to say one last thing.
Sure.
When I started in workforce development, it used to be I could sit down with an employer and I'd say, you know, what are you looking for? And they'd give me some skills and, abilities that they're looking for. And I would design a program. It would be like 4 weeks or 8 weeks or, sometimes, 16 weeks. And if I delivered to them that person and they were, we did our job right and that person was motivated, they'd get hired. Today, that's just not the case anymore. And employers are looking for folks who have experience, who have background, even entry-level jobs. I mean, it's the crazy thing that entry-level jobs require experience, right? And so part of what I would use that magic wand for is to create that pool of people for employers who need folks who have had some level of on-the-job experience or real-world experience, who haven't just sat in a classroom for 4 years and, hopefully they picked up something that was helpful for the work, but have actually been able to put that experience to work. It's that approach to skills-based hiring that, we've alluded to that I think enables employers to find the folks that they need in order for them to be successful.
So that's really a super good point. And that's really that, it's one thing for us to get employers into the circle and at the table, but it's really not going to do us any good if the students aren't there. If we don't have our adult learners that are there, our students that are dropping out of high school that want a career opportunity, that want to kind of explore and move forward with a career that maybe not post-secondary. I'm curious, do you ever, I did some time away, so I kind of lost my filter, so I call it as I see it, but do you ever get any pushback at all from post-secondary? College is a money pit in our country, and I'm wondering, what's the response or feedback you get when you talk about this in front of, college presidents?
Yeah, so, once upon a time, that was definitely the case, right? I am teaching somebody, lofty ideas, and let's not sully our conversation with this talk about paychecks and careers. And there's a few of those folks out there, but I less and less is that the case. And in fact, my organization right now has a project with community colleges across the country to look at how they can be engaging in the work of apprenticeship and be supportive of apprenticeship in the work that they do. It helps, candidly, that there's a little bit of an enrollment crisis for higher education. So many higher education institutions are looking for sort of new lines of business or new ways to engage prospective students, and apprenticeship might be one of them. But I think more and more what the message that colleges and universities are getting is that the students who are going to come out, whether they're coming out with an associate's degree or a bachelor's degree or an industry certificate of one sort or another, that they better be ready for work. That if we're paying you tuition, I'm expecting I'm going to get a job on the back end. And of course, if you're working with an apprenticeship, there might not even be a tuition involved. But I think, and one other thing, I just should say, one of the fastest growing apprenticeship areas of apprenticeship in this country right now is something called degree apprenticeship. And the idea there is that it could be that you're in a profession or looking at an occupation that really does require a degree. That might be by virtue of regulation, or it might be just because of the level of learning that's involved. And really smart employers are starting to think about how can we hire somebody before they have that degree, put them to work, and give them an opportunity to earn their degree on the employer over the course of a couple of years so that they can take that job. One of the fastest growing apprenticeships in the country right now is the public school teacher. And those are all degree-based apprenticeships. People will end up with a bachelor's degree at the end of those apprenticeships.
That's fantastic. Yeah, one of the things I heard recently was that one of the most in-demand jobs in light of the infrastructure bill that the president signed, bringing roads and highways and building that infrastructure, even with digital access, was surveyors. And surveyors have aged out of the market. And now, you know, being able to fill them back. And that's the perfect apprenticeship, especially for in the justice space where you're working, you know, pretty much by yourself or with another person and kind of framing out and doing land surveying. It's incredible. There's so many opportunities out there. And I do think that they're not mutually exclusive. Just because you go through an apprenticeship doesn't mean that you're not going to work with your employer to go post-secondary for that advanced degree at some point in time. Which is just it's a great opportunity.
And you know, by the way, that was always the knock on for many years when people talked about apprenticeship. They always want you to go to Switzerland or Germany and look at, you know, apprenticeship there. And in fact, those are amazing systems. They're really hard to create in the U.S. context, but they're amazing systems. And one of the things that they've done right there is they really have connected apprenticeship to further education. So in Germany or in Switzerland, the fellow who runs a company probably started as an apprentice. And they worked their way up and they got their college degree and then maybe they went on and got their MBA or, you know, some other advanced degree. And that's how they ended up running the company. But they started as an apprentice. And I think that's the kind of ladder that I would love to see in this country. It'll take a while.
It will definitely take a while. It hits home for me, too. So my dad was a jeweler for 60 years of his life. And ever since he was 18 years old, he was a jeweler. And he learned this remarkable trade. And there were times when during the Christmas rush, I would come down and work for him. And he taught me the trade. And I keep thinking, wow, how awesome would it be if somebody that worked in the trade and mastered it was able to pass some of that down to their staff and their workers. And apprenticeships just does that. It's just that kind of model. John, before we break off, I just wanted to again, if our audience wants to find out more about apprenticeships, how can they do that?
Yeah, so they should check on our website, apprenticeshipsforamerica.org, go to the government's website at apprenticeship.gov. Our website will give you information on the field of apprenticeship. Apprenticeships.gov will connect you to apprenticeship. Those are great next steps. And by the way, if you fill out one of the forms on our website, asking for more information, it's likely you'll get an email back from me. So.
Oh, there you go. I love it. That personal attention. You don't often get that from an ED around the country. Congratulations on your new job. I'm really, really excited for you. Looking forward to working with you going forward. And again, you know, the program is sponsored by the PD Green program, which does educational tutoring in prisons and jails around the country. And as people come home, navigating them. And we are going to make this a priority of getting involved in apprenticeships, because one of the things we want to be able to do is as men and women get into apprenticeships, we want to make sure they have the academic support that they need. So wouldn't that be awesome if for every apprenticeship you had your own tutor that could work with you so that they could really guide you academically and make sure that you knew exactly what you needed to, whether it was reading or math or just digital literacy skills, so you could be successful. Looking forward to continuing that discussion offline with you and see how we could grow that out and build it. But you've been listening to the Looking Forward Show. We're here with John Colburn. John, thanks for being with us again. If you want to reach Apprenticeships for America, apprenticeshipsforamerica.org, check it out. And we'll be back with our next episode of Looking Forward Show in another week or so. Take care, everybody.
You've been listening to WWDB AM Talk 860 and the Looking Forward Show. This program has been sponsored in part by the PD Green Program. The PD Green Program provides educational support for men and women behind and beyond the walls of our prisons and jails across the country. To get more information about the PD Green Program, you can reach us at pdgreenprogram.org. That's P-E-T-E-Y-G-R-E-E-N-E program.org. If you want to be a guest on the Looking Forward Show, it's really simple. All you need to do is send us an email at lookingforwardshow@gmail.com. The Looking Forward Show is looking for you. If you have a story to tell and you've been justice impacted, or if you're doing work in the criminal justice sector and want to share the greatness of your organization, whether it's a nonprofit or for-profit entity, please reach out to us. Give us a shout out at lookingforward@gmail.com and we'll get you scheduled for one of our upcoming shows. You can also find The Looking Forward Show on our YouTube channel, The Looking Forward Show.